and welcome back to the Deliverability Defined podcast. I'm Alyssa.
And I'm Melissa.
And we're so happy you're here for another week, another great episode. How are you doing today, Melissa?
I'm doing pretty well, actually. I feel like, I don't know, things are good.
It's a
better day today. I know. It's been a little bit of a, I don't want to say struggle. It's just been kind of a crazy few weeks, and life's crazy, work's crazy. But it's good. I think also I am totally hitting my like gloomy weather limit right now. I'm struggling with the weather.
I think like January, February are some of the hardest months. Oh my gosh. But I have to say Nashville today is literally perfect. It's 65 degrees and sunny.
Oh my gosh.
And
I almost choked on my coffee.
I know.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wish you were here. It is killing me though to just be inside and staring at it. So I did like message you and say, okay, can we please push back podcasting? And I went outside for like a 30-minute walk.
Good.
Put on a short sleeve shirt so I could really feel the sun on my skin. It was great because you'll be in Mexico next week and I won't be. So you'll get your warm weather.
I know. We will miss you. I do feel like sometimes the sun will kind of peek out momentarily here and I'll just like be on a walk or something and I'll stand on the sidewalk and people will probably drive by and be like, what is wrong with that girl? Because I'm just like, I'm trying to just like soak it in. So
I love it. We should all do that.
Yeah. Need some vitamin D. So that time of year.
For sure. Okay. Well, we are going to jump right in to talking about your sender reputation, how to maintain your domain reputation. We'll talk about why that's more important than ever. It's a conversation we're now having daily with email senders that I think didn't used to come up as much. So we're going to talk about why, and we'll get into like, how do you monitor your reputation? How do you maintain it? And if, you know, worst case scenario, it does get damaged, what do you do then? So before we, you know, jump into all that, let's at least talk about like, what even is domain reputation? I know you have a great analogy for it, Melissa, so I'll let you take that.
Oh no. What?
Your credit score.
Oh, I was
like, oh gosh.
My hands instantly started sweating. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So domain reputation, it's, I'm sorry. It's just,
it's okay.
In my head. Okay.
I should have like played a prank on you. Like the
I
one
knew
about
that.
Coffee and on Wednesdays when it's stormy outside, like that's that thing that you say.
Oh my gosh. I would like, you know me, I like panic in situations where I don't know what's going on. You would have gotten a good laugh, but you would have gotten a better laugh. Okay. Starting over. Sorry. Bear with us on this episode. Apparently domain reputation. I like to look at it similar to like a credit score. So if you have ever, like when I was in college and I applied for my first credit card, I got denied a few places because I had no credit. My parents didn't think it was a good idea apparently to like teach me how to build credit. And so I had to figure out how to get a credit card because they ran my credit score and they were like, ooh, this girl, she has no credit. We don't trust her. We're not going to give her a credit card. And somewhat similar to how a domain reputation works. For example, like if you decide, hey, I'm going to leave my current ESP and I'm going to move over to a different one. A lot of people think that there's a lot you can do in the interim to like work on your reputation. But until you actually like move over to that ESP and start sending, it's you basically start over. So your domain reputation doesn't necessarily, and we can kind of get into the nuances of this because this isn't totally true, but it doesn't follow you the way you would think when you move from an ESP to a new ESP, as far as like you've done all the hard work and you move over and you immediately just like start sending and everything's fine. Like sometimes you have to give it a little time for mailbox providers to recognize like, oh, this person used to send from an IP address with this domain. And now we're seeing that that's not true anymore. And so we don't really know what to do with the messages right now. We're going to start like, maybe we'll send a few more than normal to spam. We'll send some to the inbox. And then as they start to learn more about what kind of a sender you are in association with that new IP address that you're sending from, typically things kind of like go back to normal. But there's definitely like, for any major change that a sender makes, there can often be some changes in your engagement and your deliverability.
That's such an interesting, part about domain reputation I didn't think about when outlining this episode. Yeah, it's like even if you have a high domain reputation, let's say, we'll get into how you find that out, and you go to a new ESP to send, you're probably still actually going to have that high domain reputation.
Right.
But there's more than just domain reputation right. when it comes to deliverability. And you kind of have like a whole profile of a reputation where a lot of things are taken into account. And yeah, that's a great call out that like if anything changes, that can throw things way off track. And you sort of have to start over and re-solidify. Like, I promise I'm a trusted sender.
Right.
Here's my sending. See, people like it. But yeah, that's a, I like using that analogy too.
Like I often tell people that we often say to people, your domain reputation essentially starts over when you go to a new ESP. But like, if you had bad practices prior to moving to a new ESP, starting over doesn't mean that those things go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't totally start over. It's more that like
right.
you made a change
right.
and that freaked out Gmail or Yahoo or whoever.
Right, exactly.
But I think if you had a bad reputation, it makes things harder to recover. And if you have a really good, strong reputation, it's probably going to be a lot quicker for you to recover from that change.
Yeah, we see it all the time. Like we see people migrate to ConvertKit and they like often too, if you have like a really large list, they have a ramp up plan and they start sending to groups of people over a period of time so that that initial shock doesn't cause deliverability issues right off the bat. But like you're saying, that sender reputation helps them probably a little more than someone who's coming over with like a poor reputation. So I love to use the credit score example of like no credit. No credit can be just as bad as bad credit, but in the nuances of like deliverability,
right,
it's not an exact perfect metaphor because, yeah. So I don't know. I've been thinking about domain reputation a lot differently lately too, just because of all of the Gmail and Yahoo changes. Like we're seeing kind of this whole ecosystem shift, which it's given us a different perspective and I guess different content to even talk about in podcasting, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun to get into for sure. One thing I always like to say related to this analogy is one way it's different than a credit score is like you and I can go right now look up our credit score and it's pretty easy to see. I know there are like a few different sources. They might be a little different.
Right.
But for the most part, it's easy to find out your credit score. For the most part, you can't find out your domain reputation like across the board because each individual mailbox provider, like a Gmail, Yahoo, Microsoft, Comcast, whoever, they are going to calculate reputation in their own way. And most of them are not going to share that information with you.
Right.
But Gmail is an exception, which we talked about last week. So if you didn't go listen, definitely listen to our Google Postmaster Tools episode. It's really, I think, super important that everyone knows how to use that. So that is one place that you can go and look and see what is my domain reputation with Gmail, which is really, really helpful when it comes to solving any domain reputations you might have.
Yeah, it is a really great tool. And we've already seen people like make changes to what they're currently doing and watch their domain reputation improve, which, you know, if you didn't have the right systems in place before, you wouldn't have had access to that data. And so now that it's a little bit easier for most people to set that up, it's a really great way to monitor your reputation and actually see how the changes you're making impact, good or bad.
Definitely. And I'd love to get into what you were saying about why this is more important than ever. I think before doing that, I'm going to get a little nerdy. So I hope this isn't too in the weeds. If it is, I'm going to come out of the weeds really soon. So just stick with me.
Stick with her through the weeds.
But I do think this is important information to totally understand why Melissa and I are saying like things have really changed in deliverability, at least for ConvertKit customers and people like ConvertKit customers. Okay, so the way I'm going to present this is to tell you that there are so many different parts of your email that carry a reputation. It's not just that, you know, friendly from address that people see in their inbox when they receive an email from you. So that's like julie@deliverabilitydefined.com, for example. I don't know who Julie is, but that's not the only thing that carries a reputation, although that does carry a reputation.
Right.
There are lots of other parts that do. There is the domains that are kind of in the background of the message used for authentication. So there's a DKIM signing domain. There's a return path domain. You don't have to know what those things mean, but just so you know, there are other domains involved in the background of the message. There are also the domains involved with your links. Those matter. So historically, for a lot of ConvertKit customers, and I would say like, I mean, a lot of people who use MailChimp, ActiveCampaign, I'm just trying to think of like general email service providers that serve like small businesses or entrepreneurs. A lot of people were using their email provider's domain for those in the background domains I just mentioned, the DKIM domain, the return path domain, as well as the link tracking domains. Usually for a lot of people, that was their email provider's domain. And the only place their domain was involved was that friendly from address. And that was totally fine. Everything worked great. But now with these new requirements from Gmail and Yahoo that we've been talking about for the last few episodes, that has changed. Gmail and Yahoo will no longer allow you to use your email provider's domain for that authentication in the background if you're using your own domain in the friendly from. So that friendly from domain needs to match what's happening in the background. And what that means is your domain reputation is now weighted way more heavily than it was in the past. So for a lot of people, they could actually have some domain reputation issues going on and not even know it.
Yeah,
that's what Melissa and I are learning a lot right now working with some of our customers who have made these changes, is that they actually had high complaint rates at Gmail. They had low domain reputations or even bad domain reputations, and they had wonderful open rates. They were getting great inbox placement because ConvertKit's domain in the background was really carrying them to the inbox way more than anyone knew.
Right.
And then now that they've been forced to make these changes, they're now having to deal a little bit more with the consequences of their own reputation issues. So it's sort of this whole new world of email and deliverability where senders are going to be way, way, way more responsible for getting to the inbox, for monitoring their own reputation, making sure it's healthy, keeping spam complaints low, all of that. So that's really the purpose of this episode, is to help you manage that new change.
Yeah, that was really a good synopsis of everything. I think at the most basic level, like if somebody said, you know, explain it to me like I'm in first grade, like that's kind of the, if you're sitting there like saying that to yourself, like explain to me like I'm in first grade, think about it as like almost like a weighted system. So if your domain appears in more places in the message than it ever has before, that domain is going to be weighted more heavily. It's appearing more times in the message somewhere. And there's also like different factors within every message. So like you said, Alyssa, the links that you include, there's all of these small things that contribute to like the bigger piece of the puzzle, including like your ESP's IP reputation. And so all of these things build this overall picture with each other. And so when you think about how things are weighted, if you think about just basic numbers, like how many times is your domain in the background of the message? In that case, if it's more often than it used to be, it's being weighted more heavily. So I feel like that's the easiest way to think about how this change is affecting people in relation to domain reputation.
Yep. I love that. Another like financially related one that we've said in the past is it's like co-signing.
Oh yeah. I love that one.
Yeah, because that's easy, I think, for us to all understand.
Yeah.
You know, if you were like Melissa being in college back in the day with her, you know, credit card situation.
With my Macy's credit card, which yeah. was the only thing I could get approved for. They're like, oh, this girl likes to shop. We're going to just approve her for a Macy's credit card and see yeah. how much trouble she can get in.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I'm imagining if you wanted to go get a fancy apartment somewhere, you probably needed your parents to co-sign, which makes total sense. Yeah, I did too. Yep. You know, when I was in college, because we had no reputation and that was totally fine. Like that worked for us. The co-signing
right.
works when the person co-signing has the reputation, they can cover you. That's what email providers have been doing for a lot of people. And now basically Gmail and Yahoo are saying no more co-signing. Everyone has to do this themselves. And yeah, that's meaning a lot of people now have to figure out how to do it themselves. And, you know, if you have already been this deliverability expert, you know what you're doing, you have a strong reputation, this is probably a great change for you as well. Cause then you just get to take more ownership
right.
of your reputation, make sure your emails are getting to the inbox. You don't have to share reputation with a bunch of other senders using your email provider. Obviously at ConvertKit, we have so many systems and processes in place that was never an issue, but still like now you can have peace of mind knowing you are the one getting your emails to the inbox. But for someone who doesn't know yet, like how to do that,
mm-hmm.
it can be really tricky. So that's yeah. the whole point of this episode. And we're going to make sure you're well aware of how to make sure your reputation is healthy.
Yeah, we definitely want to spin it in a positive way because there are positive things about this change, even though for a lot of people it has felt pretty overwhelming. I also had another thought and it just went away. So yeah, we can move on.
Well, I just had another one too, just to help people conceptualize why this overall is a good thing. Because what I just mentioned, you know, about ConvertKit or email providers co-signing your emails, that means a lot of spammers could get their emails co-signed, you know, at email providers. We obviously are stopping spammers at ConvertKit really well, but it's very hard to stop spammers, honestly. And so spammers have been successful across different email providers getting their messages out by co-signing with those email providers. So this new move from Gmail and Yahoo, the main purpose is to stop that from happening. So the bad apples, the spammers, they're going to struggle way more to get their emails to the inbox, which is a win for everyone. Like, we all want less spam. So that's one positive way to look at it.
Yeah. Something we've heard, I feel like, a few times kind of through this whole process has been, I think the overall goal is to make it easier to reward good senders. And so the opposite of what you just said, like,
yeah,
catching the bad people, rewarding the ones that are doing what they need to do, best practices, following the new recommendations, being compliant, like all of those things are going to help you, even though there's kind of this like learning curve going on right now for many people. Hopefully having more control over your domain reputation is a good feeling.
Yeah, I hope so. And let's get into, a lot of people are probably wondering, okay, I get what you're saying, but how is my domain reputation calculated? Like, how do I even make it good or bad? What right. is happening there? Do you want to tell us more, Melissa, about like how in the world is it calculated?
Yeah, for sure. So there's definitely a lot of factors, kind of like I was saying, it's like all these little data points that go into making this like bigger picture. So one of the biggest influences of sender reputation is your audience and subscribers and subscriber behavior. So there's a way that we like to talk about a lot of this, which is there are positive signals and there are negative signals in deliverability. And positive signals, an example of that could be something like your subscribers love to respond to your emails because they want to, you know, respond to a question that you ask them, or they just really love your content and want to tell you how much they love it. So responses are huge. Opening, clicking through your emails, spending time on the email, reading through it. All of these things have a really positive impact on your domain reputation. And then there are some negative signals that we talk about. Things like marking an email as spam, not opening the emails, becoming like a cold subscriber, someone who doesn't engage at all, but just stays on the list and doesn't ever like unsubscribe from it and doesn't ever open it. Those are some really negative signals that mailbox providers use to decide what exactly this sender's domain reputation looks like. A way that I like to think about it is, you know, there's not like a person sitting behind all of these emails going through and saying, oh, well, that doesn't look like spam. That's a real, you know, that's an email that's okay. It's educational or it has good content. There's no bad links. Like, there's not a person sitting there looking through all of that. So the best way that we can fight spam and phish, or not we, I guess, but the mailbox providers, is by using these positive and negative signals to create this like overall picture of the sender's health of their domain reputation.
Yeah, I love that. So another way to look at it, like you said, explain like I'm five or whatever, first grade. Your subscribers have the power over your reputation for the most part. They're voting with their actions on whether your domain reputation goes up or down. So that's one way to think about it and kind of put yourself in your subscriber's shoes as you're monitoring things. Like, are people showing that they like these emails, they enjoy them, they want to receive them? That's great. Then you should have a healthy domain reputation. If not, if you're seeing signals that people are getting on your list and they don't really want to be there, then that is going to hurt your domain reputation.
I think another thing, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Like I said, I feel like this whole like ecosystem change has me like looking at this a bit differently. In some ways, it can feel really overwhelming, I'm sure, for a lot of senders to know that there are even negative signals out there that can affect their domain reputation. But ultimately, the goal for most people is to have a super engaged list so that those people convert to whatever your goal is. Whatever your business is, if it's you sell a cookbook, you sell a course, like whatever it is that you are promoting through your email, the goal is to have that be in front of the most engaged group of people you can, because if you're just sending it to people who don't open your emails or don't engage with your emails, that's a lot of wasted time and not a lot of data that you're getting back on what your audience needs. So I think a way to like view this in a positive light is those negative signals can feel overwhelming, especially when you start to experience a domain reputation issue, which we'll talk about. But the goal is to like continue to build on the positive, like best practices that we recommend. So that way, like, hopefully you see an improvement in your goals, which is whatever you're selling or whatever you're promoting in your email. So hopefully that's like kind of a helpful way to look at it.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Positivity. Just bring in the positive vibes.
I'm trying. Just kidding. Did that sound sarcastic?
No, it's just funny because people listening don't have the background information.
Oh, I know.
You're doing great, Melissa. Melissa's had a hard couple months. You know, this Yahoo Goals stuff is no joke.
The best way I can describe it, and this is just in the nicest way possible, is sometimes when you're describing very technical topics, it feels very mind-numbing.
Oh, yeah. That's why. Yeah, I know. Sometimes I'm like, are you sure people are listening to this podcast?
I know. So yeah, I hope this is helpful because sometimes I talk and I'm like, oh my God. Because especially once you've talked about it so many times, you're like, I think it's hard to find ways, or it's not hard, but like you want to find ways to help people understand these topics that's helpful to them. So
yeah, we're trying, y'all.
Positivity.
Okay, I'll stop derailing us. So here are some things you should be monitoring as a sender to try and understand how your reputation is doing. First and foremost, like we've mentioned a million times, Google Postmaster Tools. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to our episode from last week. You can also go to postmaster.google.com to get set up. It will literally tell you your domain reputation as long as you meet all their criteria, which we talked about last week. So I won't get too much into that, but that's a really helpful one. I would say open rate trends are helpful. We have had some episodes about open rates, and yes, they are not accurate. I think by this point, we all know that, you know, with all the automatic opening happening from Apple, iOS, but still looking at trends is really helpful. And Melissa and I help people with that all the time. If your open rates are normally 60%, but then one day they're 30%, that's a good sign that something is not right. Something,
or even 10%, then you know something's really messed up.
Really not right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully that doesn't happen to you. But
yes, we hope it never happens. But keeping an eye on those open rate trends are great. I think drops of like 5 points every now and then are normal. And
yeah,
like it's going to be ebbing and flowing. But anything where it's like your open rate is 10 points lower than usual or more, that's where like it starts to be a red flag to me.
Right.
That something is going on, whether it's the content or deliverability. Complaint rates. One fun call out is there's a new feature in ConvertKit where you can see the complaint rate of each broadcast. Woohoo.
That's very exciting. Yeah.
A feature request Melissa and I have each had for a long time.
Yeah.
So we're very happy.
Very, very happy about this. This is so helpful for people to be able to really like drill down on. I mean, I think for any email marketer or any person promoting a product or course, like I was mentioning, like having data is super important to you for all different kinds of reasons. So this is like very exciting.
Yes, I'm so excited about it. One little call out that I won't go too much in because we talked about it last week is that Gmail does not have a complaint feedback loop in the way that a lot of other people do. So if a Gmail user complains about your message, that will not show up in that ConvertKit complaint rate. It won't show up in any complaint rate at any ESP. It's not possible. So keep in mind that, you know, it's kind of similar to open rates. It's not exact, but keeping an eye on your complaint rate trend would be really helpful. If you start to see those rise more than normal, that's a good sign to stop, pause, like look at the people who have been complaining recently and see what's going on. What do they have in common? Try to find the trend. And then a similar one, bounce rates. We also now, you can see that for each broadcast in ConvertKit. Yay. And this one is a little more, it's actually much more accurate, which is exciting. I would say you definitely want to keep your bounce rate below 2% is like a healthy bounce rate generally. Even I would say most people I see have it below 1%.
Yeah.
If you start to see it get higher than 2%, especially higher than 5%, that's usually a sign something is going on. It might not be domain reputation. There's so many things that cause bounces.
Yeah.
But something is happening. And there's a school bus picking up. I'm sorry.
I was like, is it trash day? What is going on?
No, trash day was yesterday, but school bus is here. So sorry for the beeps.
That's totally fine. I think complaint rates are something that's really helpful. If that's something you're experiencing, you can really like kind of follow like a paper trail, essentially. So go in, look at your complaint subscribers, like you mentioned, and there can be all kinds of reasons that subscribers are complaining. We talked a little bit about this last episode too, so I won't go too far into it, but just like checking on your forms, like making sure that you're looking, when are subscribers marking emails as spam? Is it the very first email? Does it look more healthy? Meaning, are you just like seeing that maybe the person's been on the list for a long time? And I guess it's never healthy to get a complaint. That's not really what I meant. But like, if you have someone who's been on the list for a long time and it looks like they just never unsubscribed after not wanting to receive emails maybe from you or not being as engaged, and maybe they just decided to mark the email as spam, that's like more normal behavior. But that kind of goes into like keeping your list clean. So all of this stuff is like a domino effect, I feel like, on itself. But complaints are like, to me, they're one of the more helpful data points, even though they're not fun to deal with. It's a lot easier to go in and kind of follow the logic behind why someone's marking an email as spam than sometimes it is to dig into bounces on your own. So if you do notice you have a really high bounce rate on a broadcast, you don't have access to exactly what all of those bounce codes are. So you can reach out to, if you're a ConvertKit customer, reach out to our support and we can kind of dig in for you and find out what caused that bounce event.
Yeah, that's such a good call out. And I agree, like digging into complaints is some of my favorite things.
Me too.
It feels like you're an investigator. Yeah. And it is kind of fun to be like, okay, get into the brains of these humans. You're like, okay, here's five people that complained. What are the commonalities? Like, why did they complain? And usually you can figure it out. Like, it's not too hard to be like, they all came from the same form. They all complained about their very first email they received. Here's a good sign they did not sign up for these emails,
right?
Just as an example. So
yeah, exactly.
If you haven't done that, that's a fun thing to go and do.
Fun for us. I don't know if it's fun.
Clearly we're in the right industry.
Yeah.
All right. So let's assume, if you're listening to this, let's just assume for this section that you have a good reputation. We'll talk about what to do if you have a bad reputation, but let's assume you have a good reputation and you are concerned with just keeping it good, keeping it healthy, maintaining it. Let's talk about some ways that you could do that. So one that you kind of alluded to, Melissa, just now is keeping your list healthy. That can look like a lot of different things, but I think a big one is protecting your list from list bombing, which we've talked about a lot. There are a few different ways to do that. One is by using like a reCAPTCHA or a honeypot on all of your forms. If you're a ConvertKit customer and you use ConvertKit forms directly embedded on your website, we have list bombing protection happening in the background. That's pretty great. So that kind of covers you there. But if you're not using ConvertKit forms on your website, then I highly recommend using a reCAPTCHA on whichever form you're using. I know they're not the most fun thing, but I don't know of anyone who's ever been like, forget it, I'm not signing up for this email because they had to click I'm not a robot or whatever.
Right. Yeah. It's never discouraged me personally, but
no. And if it discourages someone, then do you actually want them on your list? Like, they're probably not going to be a great subscriber if that stopped them from signing up.
Right.
Just saying.
Yeah. Great point.
And then another one is to implement a double opt-in. Some people hate this.
Yeah.
I get it. But at the end of the day,
double-edged sword, I think.
Yeah. It helps keep your reputation clean. At least you know everyone on the list clicked that, yes, I want to be on the list. That's a really solid signal to keep your reputation healthy. I think if you have the reCAPTCHA enabled, or again, you're using ConvertKit forms, we have our own list bombing protection. Mm-hmm. You could get away with not adding a double opt-in immediately, but definitely keep an eye on things. If you start to see signs of list bombing, add that double opt-in. It'll still send the people, you know, one email address to confirm their opt-in, but at least they won't get stuck on your list and receive a bunch of emails from you that they didn't sign up for.
Right. Well, and at the very least too, like if you decide not to go with a double opt-in, cleaning your list maybe more regularly, like to remove those cold subscribers, might be more important for you than for someone who does have a double opt-in turned on. And people like to ask a lot, like, how often should I clean my list? And like, I really do feel like this is pretty like specific to what your business is like, how many emails you send, like what your volume is and the way your business is set up. So I think generally speaking, I would say like every 6-ish months. Do you think that's too often?
No, I think that's great. I think especially if right now we're talking about someone with a good reputation mm-hmm. and they're just being like extra cautious.
Yeah.
And I think 6 months is a good time frame. If someone had a bad reputation, I would say go a little stricter. But in this case, I think 6 is good.
Yeah.
And some people would listen to this and say, that's crazy. I'm not going to do that. Like,
yeah,
that's fine. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And you can send, you know, an opt-in confirmation, like a re-engagement email to those people. It doesn't have to be like, oh, just delete them. Mm-hmm. You can kind of make sure they're there, have them click a button if they want to stay on the list. And that'll make sure that anyone who has open tracking not turned on still has an opportunity to click a button to stay on the list.
Yeah.
Another one that I feel like you're really good at talking about, Melissa, but I'll try for a second, is to segment your list. So make sure the emails you're sending are as applicable to each person as possible. We see a lot of times someone will just like blast out, I hate the word blast.
I know.
Oh gosh. send out like daily emails to their entire list. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, why do I have a bad domain reputation or whatever? And we're like, you know, how about you send emails about food to people who have said, I'm interested in hearing about food.
Right.
And send, you know, about health to people who are interested in health.
I just think this is one of the hardest, for some reason, one of it. I mean, it's something that I feel like ConvertKit does really well. Like segmentation that we have at ConvertKit is amazing. I think it's one of the, like, for some people, this is not a for all people. For some creators, I think this could be used so much better and so much more to improve their engagement with their audience, which in turn helps their domain reputation. I think that assuming that a list of 500,000 and emailing 500,000 people every single day with everyone having the same content, like, I think you're just missing out on opportunity to really like niche down on your audience and gain more insight into what else you could provide for content. And there's a lot, I mean, I will say, I think there is a little bit of back end work that goes involved in all of this to make it functional and happen and successful. But I think the people that I have seen really segment their audience based on, you know, interests or like the example you gave about like food, or I always use like dogs and cats as an example, they are seeing far like higher open rates than someone who's not segmenting their list. And it's just like a fact. Like I see it every single day.
Yeah.
And again, I think there's definitely some work that goes into it at the beginning, but once you kind of get that in place and you offer like potential, you know, potentially you have subscriber preferences at the bottom of your email next to the unsubscribe link. And maybe that deters someone from unsubscribing from your list. Like you could save someone from leaving by giving them the opportunity to say, you know, I only want to receive one email a month. Like I really appreciate creators and senders who offer that because sometimes I'm just like not in the headspace to receive as much mail as they send, but I still like them as a creator.
Yeah. I love that. It's such a good one. I was just pondering this. And I feel like one way to make it easier on yourself, it starts kind of with the opt-in. Mm. So if you, let's just say, obviously this is always on my mind these days, parenting. Let's say, because I run into this a lot actually with like parenting accounts online that I'm like, ooh, I love this content, but my son is almost 2 and they're talking about like how to handle bullying or something. Mm. And I'm like, I don't need this yet.
Yes, you don't have the brain space for that yet. No, that's got to wait. No. Yeah,
exactly. But like they also talk about stuff that relates to me. So
Right. Let's
translate this to email world. Instead of like a parenting creator having general like sign up to my newsletter form, what I would love is if they have a sign up to, you know, toddler picky eating guide. I sign up to that, then they know like around the age of my child.
Right.
And they can tag me immediately based on which form I signed up to and put me in emails specifically for that age group. Obviously, this is a tricky one because I'm gonna change as things age. But with ConvertKit, you can do fancy stuff. Like they could automatically remove toddler tag after a year
Right. And
add kid tag. I don't know. This is, you know, like a live brainstorm, but you can do things like that. So
Yeah. That's
just one example. And they could have another form that's like, I'll just use the bullying example again. How to help your kid with bullying. And that, again, if someone signs up to that, you're not going to be sending them tips about toddlerhood. You're going to send them much more
Right. Different
content and you can keep them in that flow. So I think if you do have, we've definitely had some listeners write into us before and be like, I have different types of audiences in my audience and I don't know what to do about that.
Right.
I think if you can start with having different forms and then putting those people on like different tracks, giving them different tags based on those forms, that'll make your life way easier to start with.
Totally. Yeah. And I think another one too, that could be like easy to just attach something to, like a tag or whatever, would be clicks. Mm-hmm. So if you notice that you have like certain subscribers who are clicking consistently, like a link that, you know, could apply mm-hmm. to a specific topic or whatever, like that would be really easy too, to add a tag to those people to say, oh, it looks like this group of people is really interested in this thing that I keep linking to.
Right.
So there's a few things like that that might already be happening in your account that all you need to do is kind of just find a way to start grouping those people together so that you can create some different processes, I guess, around that.
Yeah, that was great. So that was, you know, some ideas on how to keep your healthy sender reputation protected. But let's get into, what do you do if, you know, you've listened to this podcast, you're like, I'm going to go set up Google Postmaster tools. You log in and it says you have a low sender reputation or a bad sender reputation. Mm. You're probably, your next step is like, what the heck do I do? So
yeah,
I would say step one is figure out why, which we did talk about a little bit last week, but I'll get more into it. That's number one step, like stop the bleeding, kind of like, how do we get here? And that is going to take some investigating. If you're a ConvertKit customer, you got us, which is great. Go ahead and reach out to our support team. Tell them, you know, get me connected mm-hmm. with Melissa or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll take care of you. If you're not a ConvertKit customer, you might have to do some investigating. I'm not sure if your email provider can help you, but definitely try. And here are the things that I would look into. First, if you're using Google Postmaster tools, you can go look at your spam rate. That's really helpful. Mm-hmm. Like, how high are your spam complaints? One tricky thing about that we didn't talk about last week, is that if your domain reputation is bad enough that all your emails are going to spam at Gmail, you're going to have a low spam rate because no one is seeing your message.
Right.
So no one's marking your message as spam.
Yeah.
I've actually seen that in a few people's Google Postmaster tools. They'll have a bad reputation and 0% complaint rates. And they're so confused.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
People are like, how in the world do I have a bad domain reputation when I have no spam complaint rates? And the answer is no one is seeing your message because they're all going to spam. So no one is complaining about your message. So that's the first thing I would do, is look into complaints. And then kind of the steps that Melissa and I just talked about like investigating the people who are complaining, what's going on there? Like, what do they have in common? What trends can you find? What themes can you find?
Yeah, that's what I've been doing for any customer that reaches out and like asks to have a call with me. I kind of have been walking through the account with them and being like, okay, let's start with spam complaints. And like, let's look in Google Postmaster tools. That is the hardest thing to say. I wish, like,
I know.
And see. And so even though Gmail doesn't report spam complaints to ESPs, it's still helpful to be like, oh, I'm seeing spam complaints that are high at Google Postmaster tools. So let's go into your ConvertKit account and look at the spam complaints and see if we see any trends. That has actually helped me quite a bit lately. Like, I used to do this before we kind of had everyone set up on Google Postmaster tools. I would still go look at complaints. But now it's almost like there's sort of a direct line to like, to have them be like, okay, we're seeing this happening. So it's making my job a little easier where I'm like, oh, I know where I want to go look first to see like what's going on. So that's been probably my number one step in this process with helping people, is looking at spam complaints.
Yep, that's a good one. And I would say once we dig in, usually what we find is either, I know we keep talking about it, list bombing. That is a big one that affects like a lot of senders who don't mean to do anything wrong. It's just happening to them. So I won't go too much into that. We have a whole episode on it. And then another one, which hopefully you don't fall into this if you're listening to our podcast, but purchasing a list, scraping a list.
Bad practices.
That's going to hurt your reputation. And there's some that aren't as like, malicious might not be the right word, but there's some that are a little more gray area we see people fall into, where it's like, well, I did a giveaway with my friend who's also a food blogger. And in that joint giveaway, people signed up with their email addresses. And then we both took that list and imported it into our accounts. And I know that that's probably, again, like someone didn't mean to do anything wrong there.
Yeah.
But that's probably going to hurt your reputation and cause spam complaints because
people
didn't sign up to receive emails from you specifically. They signed up to win a free Peloton. So
yeah, a free cat at this point.
Honestly, I would give this cat to anyone who wants him. So I'm serious. Don't tell my husband I said that. He'd be so sad.
Oh my gosh. It's just cracking me up. I think that's super common to be doing something that you don't realize is causing spam complaints. I gave that example last week of someone who was like, they have a form set up on their website and they had people signing up and it was like, tell a friend about this thing. And so the people, like, it's like me putting Alyssa's email address into a form without her knowing. And again, no malicious intent whatsoever, but they don't think they connected the dots of like, oh, I have a really, really elevated spam complaint rate right now. And I was asking people to put other people's email addresses into this form and like didn't connect the dots until we were looking through. And I was like, there's something going on here. And they were like, oh, I see what's going on. So yeah, it's not always like super obvious when you've set up these processes in your account. You're not always thinking like, oh, that's directly what's causing that.
Right. A good question to ask yourself as you're listening to this. Is there any individual on my list that I know of who did not directly opt in to receive my email marketing? If the answer is yes, they probably need to go. It's just a good rule of thumb. Anyone who's there and didn't fully sign up for your emails, but they're there because like, well, they were at this event and I spoke at the event and the event gave me the email addresses of the attendees. It's like, that's not going to go well. They didn't sign up to be on your list. It's just not a good thing to do. Let's see. So on that note, after you found out the root cause, the next step is really to clean out any bad apples, whether that's bot addresses. Sometimes they're easy to point out because they have sort of gibberish first names, whether it's, you know, that bad list we just talked about and you got to get rid of them. But if you can, you know, figure out what the problem is, the next step is to remove any subscribers who came in from that problem. And then next, we talked about cleaning your list. If you're not ready to fully clean your list, one thing we talk about a lot is you can temporarily exclude some unengaged subscribers just to give your sender reputation a boost while you're sort of in this rebuilding phase. So one example is you could exclude any subscriber who hasn't opened an email in the last 3 months for like at least a week or two and see how your domain reputation changes at Gmail. If it's going up, that's great. And you can slowly start adding some people back in, but obviously I would end up removing people who are more unengaged.
Mm-hmm. I found for most people who have a larger list of cold subscribers, they usually have what I would call like cold people. And then they have people who have maybe just like just turned cold. And so if you're one of those senders who has like a larger cold subscriber list, don't panic if you go in and you're like, oh my gosh, I've never cleaned my list. I don't want to get rid of 20,000 people or whatever. There's usually a little bit of like variation. Like you can kind of look through and say, okay, this group of cold subscribers came in from this form at this time. Maybe I'll just like remove those people to start and I'm going to exclude the rest of the people. So I've been trying to like help senders not panic over having larger cold lists because it doesn't mean that like everyone's in the same boat and no one's ever going to open an email from you from that list. It just means that you need to be very like cautious and focused on making sure that you are strategic about how you incorporate those people back into your list. It doesn't mean you have to remove everybody at the same time, but I mean, you know, I say this a lot too, like you are paying for those people to stay on your list. And if they're not opening your emails, is it worth holding on to them? Do you think that there's enough there to have them convert back over to engaged subscriber?
Yeah, especially when they're potentially risking your good subscribers even seeing your message. Like your actual buyers might not see your message because of these unengaged people.
Yeah, good point.
Oh, I had something else. Oh, if you are a ConvertKit customer and you have a pro plan, one really great feature I lean on a lot with people is we have subscriber scoring. So you don't have to go full out, like get rid of all your cold subscribers. You can just do 1-star subscribers, which I think are people who haven't opened in the last year. Don't quote me on that. We have a knowledge base article that'll tell you, but I think that 1-star is people who haven't opened in a year. 2-star is people who haven't opened in the last 9 months. So if you want to start with those 1-stars, mm-hmm. get rid of them, see how things go.
Yeah.
Then maybe move on to 2-stars. My cat is literally insane.
What's he doing?
He's playing with a cord and it's clinking against my desk leg.
Yeah.
I swear he just loves attention. He only does this if I'm on a Zoom call or if I'm podcasting.
Yeah, they 100% know. My dog is the same way. If I'm on my computer and like have something really important to do, he'll come over and boop me with his nose super hard. Like they know.
They do. He's like, okay, you guys have been talking for like 50 minutes. No one wants to listen to this anymore. You got to go.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
If you're still listening, we love you and you're amazing. And thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for following along. Domain reputation is a meaty part of deliverability. It's like something I think we could talk about for a really long time because it kind of goes over into like marketing strategy a little bit, like as we were talking about with like how to engage your subscribers. Like that is not just a like deliverability technicality, that also kind of crosses over into like this marketing strategy concept, which I think is why this part of deliverability is so interesting, because you kind of have to think outside the box sometimes.
Yeah. And if you're out there struggling with domain reputation, one thing I said to someone recently is like, and I'm not going to say it well, but just not to get discouraged, because if you have a low or bad domain reputation, Melissa and I know well enough, like there are probably many, many ways for you to fix it. Once you've identified what those things are, it will improve.
Right.
And we have seen it doesn't take too long once you have figured out the root cause and you've stopped that issue. Like you've stopped receiving so many complaints, whatever it may be.
Right.
One thing that Gmail did say in their new help documentation is that the higher your spam complaint rate gets, the longer it's going to take you to recover. So this is another reason why monitoring Google Postmaster tools regularly, not letting things get too high, is really, really important. Once you see yourself get to the 0.1% complaint rate, start investigating.
Yeah.
Don't let it get up to 0.3% or higher. The higher it gets, the bigger of a mountain it's going to be to climb to get your reputation repaired.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I had to wait till the last, hour of the podcast to share that wisdom. It's only for the loyal people out there. If people turned it off, they're going to miss it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
okay.
Had to save a little nugget for the end.
Always wait till the end, you guys. If you leave too soon, you never know what you're going to miss.
That's so true. I've had many life experiences like that.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, I hope everyone has a great day. I hope everyone has healthy sender reputations, but let us know how we can help you as always.
Sounds good. Well, thank you for being here and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Deliverability Defined.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening. And if you have time, please leave us a review.
You can find a resource guide for today's show at convertkit.com/deliverability, where we outline all of the information you need to know from today's episode.
If you have a question or topic you want us to cover, let us know within the ConvertKit community or at convertkit.com/deliverability.
We'll see you next week.